Hello, this is Tyler Geis with BorrowingTape.com. I'm here with Michael Kennedy, writer and producer of It's a Wonderful Life. It's a Wonderful Knife.
Hey, I get it. I've said it myself the wrong way a million times.
Literally, I was practicing that in my head when I was crafting questions. Don't say It's a Wonderful Life. But I do have some questions about the inspiration behind It's a Wonderful Knife. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with me. I really appreciate it. Really enjoyed the film. Really enjoyed your past work, too. I'm a big fan of some other certain films, horror films you've written. Freaky is one of them, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah. I don't know which one is better yet. I haven't made a decision, but they're both great movies.
Freaky's a hard act to follow.
It really was. It's great. But we're not here to talk about Freaky, although I'd like to. Let me get started with It's a Wonderful Knife. And with the million-dollar question here, as a writer, what gave you this concept? I mean, I think we know where you kind of pulled inspiration from. But in my head, I picture you about a year or two ago watching It's a Wonderful Life and thinking, could I turn that into a slasher? I mean, how did you decide to turn this on its head?
I mean, that's close. We were in lockdown in 2020, and Freaky had been made and was like getting ready to be released and stuff, and I was kind of trying to figure out what I was going to do next, and I wanted to write a Christmas horror movie. I always wanted to write a Christmas horror movie, so I sat down and I go, I'm gonna write a Christmas horror movie. And so I was like trying to figure out like what was that going to look like. You know, Black Christmas is one of my favorite movies ever, the original, not just horror movies, but movies in general. And I was just like, okay, like, I don't want to go dark because like that movie handles it perfectly. There's just no topping a movie like that. And then I also knew I didn't want a Santa Claus killer because that's been done a million times too. And then I started kind of weirdly started reminiscing about Freaky, quite frankly. I started thinking about how insane that whole thing came about and how fast and how much fun I had on that movie, writing that movie with Chris Landon. You know, I when we decided to do it together, we had been friends for only about 6 months and we became really close making that movie. And it was one of those situations where Chris was like, come to set, come be part of this movie from beginning to end. And the whole experience was fantastic. He runs an amazing set. He makes amazing movies. The actors love him. The crew loves him. And I honestly was just sitting there going, God, I miss that movie. I had so much fun on it. And it made me just kind of go, maybe I can kind of do something similar. Kind of tap into that mashup of horror and comedy and of a classic movie. And I immediately thought of It's a Wonderful Life. So then I was just kind of like, okay, would that work? You know, like, what would that look like? But it was also, there was an emotional connection to it. It was my dad's favorite movie and he had passed away a few years earlier. So I was like, oh, this could be kind of fun to like, weirdly honor him. And it was a movie I knew really well. It was a family staple, still is. I mean, I grew up in a time when that movie was on 55 times a day on cable television back in the day, or on your local station, and you could change the channel 10 times and it would be on all 10 channels. Thumbs up. And my just did a thumbs up. You could do like a, you know, you'd turn it and it would be at the end of the movie, and the next station it would be at the beginning of the movie, and it was just always around. And so I watched it, and that's when I started really thinking about it, and I realized how dark that movie is. Pretty dark, and it's,
yeah,
goes to some fucked up places, but it's also super sweet and fun and emotional. And I was like, I think I could do something here. And so I just kind of sat down and was like, what would that look like as a slasher movie where George Bailey is a 17-year-old girl?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of snowballed from there.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Let's just to kind of talk craft for a second. As a writer, do you do outlines? Do you do index cards, or do you just vomit draft a thing and then go back and rework it?
I'll tell you what, I used to vomit draft and go back and work it, but on Freaky, Chris and I did an outline, and I really realized during that process how great an outline could be. So yeah, like, yeah. Now I like always outline. I outline so specifically too that when I'm done with my outline, the script is really almost just me adding the dialogue. Cool. So I find it really helpful. I get really specific in my outlines. In fact, sometimes I have producers be like, there's too much here. but I get so specific that it makes, to me, the hardest part is the story, right? So like once I can outline a story and really go, okay, I have the story here, everything else just kind of flows. Like Chris and I outlined, we outlined longer on Freaky than it took us to write the script. Mm-hmm. Because we had the outline so specific and we knew exactly what the movie was. So yeah, I definitely outline now. It's super beneficial.
Interesting. Yeah. All right. I want to ask about the killer's suit in this. Like, because the first time I saw it, when it pops up on screen, I was like, oh my God, is that the Virgin Mary from the whatever the religious little statues that they do around Christmas time? Like, yeah. I didn't know what it was at first. I thought it was so cool looking. It also kind of felt like something out of like an old Italian giallo movie.
Yeah,
like,
totally. What, right.
Was it always that look on the page, or did something evolve over time?
You know, I don't think I could ever describe that look to a T because it's so specific, but I, like I said, I went in knowing it wasn't going to be Santa Claus.
Yeah.
And then I started thinking about like, what are some other iconic Christmas imagery? And everyone puts an angel on the top of their tree. Okay. And, you know, it also plays into the virgin birth because, you know, like she was visited by an angel who's like, poof, you're pregnant. so I thought that was interesting. And I just thought it was a really interesting spin, plus with snow and stuff, it could kind of blend into the background. But in the script, I described the killer's attire as wearing white from head to toe. Like I said, white mask, white robe, white gloves, white boots, everything white. And then I was a little bit more specific with the dagger itself. I described kind of what that looked like from tip to handle, but then they kind of ran with both. Like Tiana, our production designer, I guess, just learned this recently in a meeting. They were talking about the looks for both, and she sketched the dagger and she added those wings to it, which I thought was great because I thought that was the one thing missing from the angel. But you could, we knew right away you couldn't put wings on this killer. Would just look weird and would be hard to maneuver and stuff. So she had the bright idea to like put it on the dagger itself. And then the Tyler Matea, our costume designer, and Tiana, the production designer, they then just sat down and kind of lobbied ideas back and forth on like what their interpretation of my description looked like. And then once they kind of figured out that, they then did a bunch of screen tests of material and masks and all this different stuff. So it's crazy how much of a process that really was.
Yeah.
Get the look, but I think the look is super cool.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, agreed.
And that was the other thing. I went in going, I want a slasher. Like,
yeah,
feel like we've kind of gotten away from costumes. You know, it's
yeah,
a few slashers I've seen. Like, I love Totally Killer, but it's just a dude in a random mask with a hoodie. You know, and that's you know been the template lately. So I was like, I want a look. I want like a look.
Yeah, no, it was. You guys definitely accomplished that. It stood out to me. Plus he's like all in white too, or like a white silvery kind of look. I thought it popped on screen really well.
Yeah, it's super cool.
I just want to ask because he is popping up. I mean, he kind of got his start in the genre really with films like Jeepers Creepers and whatnot 20 something years ago. But like Justin Long with Barbarian, and now he just popped up in the Goosebumps series. As on Disney Plus and Hulu, I believe, which I thought is that's a really good series too.
Yeah.
He pops up in this. This cast is phenomenal, but I just wanted to specifically ask about working with Justin Long. I think he's great.
Yeah. Justin was only there a week. We had very limited time with him. But the thing that is great about him from the get-go was he read the script. He liked the script, but he also basically was like, I want to do this, but I have an interpretation of it already. And he was just really honest with us and was like, I would love to do this if I make this movie. And so he pitched us that whole look. Like the whole look he has in the movie, he pitched. He was like, I want huge fucking veneers. I want this like ugly blonde boyish kind of hair, but like kind of sleazy looking. And he's like, and I want to wear blue contacts. I want to be spray paint. I wanted to be spray tanned and all this stuff. And for a minute, we were all kind of just like, what the fuck? Like, so out there. But then when he was like, you know, I'm basing this on Joel Osteen. You familiar with Joel Osteen?
Oh my God. My like great grandmother used to send him money, but like,
exactly. My God, that's so funny. So when he said that, it really clicked for everybody. We're like, oh,
yeah,
he's going with this like smarmy, kill him with kindness, like where he'll insult you to your face and you don't even know it. was like very clear that the only actor that could get away with doing that is him. So we were just kind of like, okay, let's run with that. So then when he was on set, it was really funny because he would be in that whole costume between takes, eating food and like talking and stuff. But he also has a really specific, like the way he works, like, you know, he jokes around between takes, but then he always has a few moments before he's going to do another take where he kind of gets back into character and is just kind of making up just kind of conversations with himself of what this dude would sound like. So that was really fascinating to watch, because you'd be talking to him about like the most random thing, and then the next thing you know, he'd be over in the corner and he'd be Henry Waters for a few minutes before he was back on set. So like, it was really interesting to watch. He's definitely an actor's actor. Like he takes his work seriously, you know. He has, and for him, I know it's been really exciting to kind of play different, because he's always had this like boyish kind of look and always been kind of the boyish kid or the nerd, and even in some of his older stuff. So I think he's kind of relishing in his villain era. He can play a little bit more just different types of characters. And I think, you know, I never imagined Henry Waters being the way he is, and now I can't imagine it any other way.
I dig his, I don't want to say it's like a renaissance in his career, because he's always been around, but like I kind of dig the shift I feel like he's kind of done the last 3 to 4 years. It's been fun to watch.
Yeah, and like Barbarian's so great, and after watching him work, I'm like dying to talk to him now, or like even Zach Krieger, who directed that, and be like, how much of that was Justin and how much of that was you? You know, I'm so curious to know like what he brought to that role, because the other thing is he's like not shy at all, so I can only imagine him taking it like that and pitching all these great things on it and stuff. So some really funny lines in Barbarian that are so funny.
There is a, in your film, there's like a phenomenal shift in aesthetic and style and look of the movie. How I felt like the first 20 minutes, like my wife came in and kind of watched me watch it while I was watching the screener.
A Hallmark movie?
Exactly. She's like, what are you doing? Are you reviewing a Lifetime original? And I was just like, no, it's actually a horror movie, but I think that's the vibe they're going for. Yeah. It's supposed to kind of look like a Hallmark movie.
Yeah.
And I thought that was going to be the whole film. And then it does that kind of dark shift when the whole It's a Wonderful Life thing happens. Right. You know, on the page, was it all there? And if it was, like, when you were shopping the script around, were you, like, nervous about a shift in tone like that?
No. It was there. You know, there was, like, a wholesome, there's, like, what Tyler calls, like, the Hallmark bookends. Mm-hmm. For me, it was also, like, a way to satirize just, you know, Hallmark films in and of itself, because they're so sweet and they're so they're almost too sweet, and there's like a toxic positivity to them that I kind of wanted to put a nail in a little bit. But also, you know, with this tonal shift, it does happen in the script quite a bit, with just the weirdness of the world and just it kind of being left of center, like off kilter the whole time. I kept thinking of like Back to the Future 2 when I was writing that part of the movie. But I know, yes, the Hallmark aspect was definitely like intentional. And I know for Tyler, when he read the script, he said he immediately thought of like reds and greens for the bookends, and then just nothing but blue in the middle part of the movie. So like, it's even little things are different, like the solo cups at the parties, and the first party they're red and the second party they're blue. And even like the Letterman's jackets, they're red in the first part of the movie, they're blue in the second part of the movie. Even the exit signs at the movie theater go from red to blue. So there was definitely like a very much a tonal shift, even visually, on purpose to kind of just make everything feel dirty and icky. I don't even, the snow you can see in the other world is a little bit gray. But it was like fun to kind of have go from like syrupy sweet to like kids doing meth.
and that was
a lot of that was on the page, but Tyler did like a really good visual interpretation of it that you can't really write, you know. Like, it never would have occurred to me to even be like, by the way, the exit signs now are blue, you know. It's just like,
wow.
Yeah,
that's awesome. In terms of, you know, just you in general, and we can kind of compare it to the film, like just real quick, who's your filmmaking inspirations, and did you kind of utilize any of that while crafting the movie outside of It's a Wonderful Life, of course?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Kevin Williamson and Wes Craven, Scream completely changed my life, and it's DNA is in me at this point, I feel like. So like, I feel like I'm always kind of going back to that movie whenever I'm trying to craft my own story. I read a lot of Kevin's old scripts when I'm writing to kind of just, how did he word this? How did he visually describe something? Weirdly, I've been able to become good friends with Kevin in the last few years too. So I have this like inspirational friend that I can call. Nice. Kevin read several drafts of the script for me and gave me notes, which is fucking wild to think about, that I got notes from Kevin Williamson on a script of mine. And then like another person is Chris Landon. Like working with Chris on Freaky was like a film school in of itself, and learned a lot about the writing process in there. And he's someone I still work with and look up to. And yeah, I'm very fortunate that I have these like people in my life now that I can just call on the phone and literally be like, hey, Kevin, when you were making Scream 2, what were you thinking here?
It's funny you mentioned Scream, because the way the killer kind of moves, he's very fast paced. And I did get a Ghostface vibe.
Yeah. I mean, we call him reverse Ghostface on set.
Yeah.
A lot of the times with his look and stuff. Yeah. And I always knew I wanted like a very fast, like vicious killer, you know? Yeah. I always laugh when, like, you know, it's scary watching the first Halloween because it's Michael's playing like with his toys essentially in that movie. But then you watch some of the later ones and you're like, that girl should be a mile ahead of him by now.
Definitely. You mentioned a few Christmas horror movies at the top here. And I mean, obviously It's a Wonderful Life is going to go into that subgenre. And I think it's a pretty standout film in that subgenre. Do you think we should get more Christmas horror movies? Because I think it's an overlooked subgenre. I know I'm saying that a lot, but.
Tons of them. Give us as many as you can. Absolutely. There's never enough Christmas horror.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, agreed. There's a ton of Hallmark Christmas movies, but yeah.
I want to see a horror version of Christmas Carol.
I think the George C. Scott one, when Christmas Future kind of shows up, that's actually a horror movie in and of itself.
You know what I saw on a Christmas horror movie list recently, though, which I thought was interesting, was Scrooged. I saw someone like,
I could see it. When he's in the casket and it's on fire, like that gave me nightmares as a kid.
Yeah.
That would be awesome. But to wrap things up here.
Yes, sir.
just real quick, what do you want audiences to take away from this film?
I want them to just have fun more than anything. I think a lot of my work, whether it works or not to people, I think there's an emotional current running through what I do. Mm-hmm. So I want people to take away just that, like the feel good nature of this one, especially. There is a sweetness to it on purpose because it is a Christmas movie at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And like you said, I want it to become a part of people's regular rotation. And also I want queer audiences to really feel good, because, you know, the reason this movie's completely gay and there's about 20 gay characters in it is because I'm a queer person and I wasn't afforded that when I was a kid. There's a lot of subtext in horror, but there's not a lot of text. And a person who's able to make movies, I kind of am giving my teenage self, like throwing my teenage self some bones, for lack of a better word. And I'm really excited for younger audiences to kind of be like, oh, cool. You know, like discover something that I didn't, you know, like Chris and I did that in Freaky. We had such a queer current running through that movie because as queer teenagers, we didn't get that. So we're like, well, let's give it to them now.